Everything Nicholas Snow is available at nicholassnow.com. For our video, Everything Nicholas Snow is available at nicholassnow.com. For our video programming, Everything Nicholas Snow is available at nicholassnow.com. For our video programming, check out nicholassnow.tv. Please subscribe to the show for free at iTunes or by downloading a podcast app from your favorite app store. Are you ready for a snowstorm of global proportion? Yes, over 6 feet of snow has just hit your podcast experience. And here he is, Nicholas Snow.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. We're going out live on October 8th, 2015 at 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. In today's episode, I'm featuring Proxy, which is a compelling new dramatic feature film. And on the show to talk about it, I have writer, producer, director, actor. He's a quadruple threat, Brandon Dayette, and also actor Charlie Harding. So the film's synopsis: on a Sunday in July, one man's indiscretion affects 8 lives. Joss thinks his only goal is to get back his grandmother's engagement ring from ex-girlfriend Tess. A casual day gets much more serious for Steve and Tristan once their friend Price leaves for a date. And a family secret causes friends Rebecca and Carrie to reveal secrets of their own. Here's the audio of the official trailer from Proxy.
I always had this dream of this one moment in my life and how it would happen.
I'm just asking you to come inside. I'm not asking you to rehash the past 11 years of me and have everything be the way it was.
He wanted to meet me at his hotel. Okay?
Really?
Are you happy?
I expect you want honesty.
The last thing I need for my best friend right now is for her to tell me the truth.
Then no, Carrie. I'm not happy.
You know the guy Price is going to meet.
So what?
You have had 11 years.
Let me finish.
Answer the what?
Answer
the
what?
Answer the what? Answer the what? Answer the what? Answer the what? Answer the what? Answer the what? Answer the what? Answer the what? Answer the what? Answer the what? And we're here. Just two people making a connection.
As I mentioned, writer, director, producer, actor Brandon Dayette started producing in 1994 at the legal age of 14. While this seems like a stretch, it was merely a favor from a friend's father that allowed him to do so. Since then, he's gone on to work in broadcast news, produce photo shoots, commercials, theater, and video, written for and acted in theater and commercials and movies. And Charlie Harding began his performance career by playing Charlie Brown on stage in high school. After many years out of the performance arena, many people know that he made his adult acting debut for Falcon Studios in February 2012 and went on to perform in 25 adult films, but he's very excited about transitioning into mainstream entertainment. Coming up,
the snowstorm continues after this.
Spotlight on Palm Springs.
Come to Lulu, the award-winning California bistro. Fabulous breakfast, a luscious three-course Sunday brunch, scrumptious dinners serving fresh fish, perfect steaks, pizzas, salads, and more. Something for everyone. A three-course special to savor from $15.99. The best all-day and night happy hour. There's always a party at Lulu in the heart of downtown Palm Springs on South Palm Canyon and Arenas.
Hi, I'm Nicholas Snow. Many of you know that I am HIV positive. I'm living powerfully with HIV because I benefit from the services of the Desert AIDS Project in Palm Springs, California, and I'm very happy to bring you this news from another grateful client of Desert AIDS Project.
I'm more proactive with my health now, I think, than I was before, and I think that's because there's other people that are being proactive with me. You know, there's people that are interested and concerned about it.
A lot of services that are very difficult to access to HIV-infected patients are gathered within one roof. We do have access to substance abuse counselor, mental health services, psychiatrists. We have dental service programs. We have nutritional programs. Housing case management, very unique in the nation, that all the programs, including medical services, are administered within one facility.
Coming here, I felt just an amazing amount of love from Desert AIDS Project. They are people who just care in the community, people who want to put a hand out and say, let me hold yours. And I think that makes all the difference in the world.
For more information, visit desertaidsproject.org.
And now, on with the show. He's a regular contributor to the Huffington Post and to media outlets throughout the world. He's an author, singer, songwriter, actor, and activist, and the executive producer and host of NicholasSnow.tv. He has created and continues to do so a snowstorm of global proportions dedicated to connecting the circuitry of humanity. And now, drifting into the studio and your life once again, Nicholas Snow.
So if you listen to my show on a regular basis, you know I'm doing a cluster of episodes featuring filmmakers, and filmmakers have a lot in common, but one of the things that this particular cluster of filmmakers have in common is that their films were official selections of Cinema Diverse, the Palm Springs LGBTQ Film Festival, which takes place annually, of course, in Palm Springs. So check them out at cinemadiverse.org. In the show today, I'm discussing the film Proxy, and as I talk about it with the team, you can go to proxythefilm.com, where there's lots of more information. And without further ado, I'm going to bring on Brandon Dayette. Welcome, Brandon.
Hey, thanks.
And also Charlie Harding. Hey, welcome to the show, Charlie.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is going to be fun.
I'm looking forward to it. So, Brandon, you have quite the interesting background, and I'm wondering if we could just start kind of at the beginning about where you grew up and what inspired you to get into the business and stay focused all these years.
Oh, goodness. well, I actually am a military brat, so I was born in Anchorage, Alaska. I think the last time I counted was 48 different places throughout my life, and I'm 35 now. So as you can imagine, it's quite a few moves. By the time I was 18, I think we'd moved like 19 or 20 times. So it's kind of crazy. We lived in Massachusetts, Connecticut, Texas, New York, Georgia, Florida, Italy, New Zealand. So it's been all over the place, and I think that the one thing that kind of kept me constant throughout all these different places and moving was actually film and TV. It was a way that it kind of connected me back to my family in the United States, because mostly I grew up overseas. So they would put in a tape and just let it run for 10 hours, VHS cassette, and record. And so it would record like MTV or like the Cartoon Network or whatever it might be. And that's the way we kind of communicated back and forth, sending these tapes to each other. And I just became so enamored with film and television that, I don't know, I didn't have any other choice.
Well, congratulations for staying put. Now, I know your film just screened in Atlanta. Are you still in Atlanta?
No, I actually just got back. I have a shoot that I'm doing this week and next week here in Miami for a commercial. And then I got to fly straight to New York because I have a photo shoot and a video shoot for, I guess I could say it, InStyle magazine and JCPenney. And then back to Miami for a week for another shoot and then back to New York for another shoot. So it's just,
well,
it's
shoot,
crazy.
You're busy.
Yeah.
So, Charlie, where are you calling in from today?
I actually live in San Diego now. So
wow,
my partner,
you're on
my husband. Yeah. Just down the road from Palm Springs, you know?
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Well, fantastic. Well, I'm based in Palm Springs, but my audience is worldwide. So
right.
You, of course, like many of us, had the acting bug in high school is when you were in
Charlie.
Oh,
yes. Yep. I started doing a little bit of acting in high school and kind of loved it.
And then, of course, many of us think we have to have a responsible job when we get out of school and we don't necessarily follow that passion. So what was your sort of course of action when you got out of high school?
Well, got out of high school, I was a scholarship athlete for springboard diving in college.
Are you serious?
And yeah, I'm NCAA champion diver of the year for the Atlantic 10 Conference, that kind of thing. Many, many, many years ago. But and so, you know, go to college, get a degree in business, you know, get your 9-to-5 day job. That, you know, that was kind of the expectation. And I kind of threw that all out the window after I graduated from college and, you know, kind of continued down a more creative and artistic path.
And I probably would not have known that you were an adult film star because I don't really consume a lot of adult film, not that I have anything against it, but you guys collectively made a decision to put that in your bio going out, and I was curious, as you seek to transition into mainstream entertainment, and I must say I felt you did do a great job in the film, Charlie.
Well, thank you.
Is there any reason why you decided to go ahead and put that bio out there?
Do you mind
if I
answer this?
Go right ahead.
Okay. This is Brandon, and the reason why is because when I told my boss about Charlie's past, he was like, oh, okay. And I was like, well, I don't know if that's going to bring any negative criticism to the film. And he goes, no, let's just, like, handle it up front, attack it, and put it out there so that nobody turns around and says, oh, well, did you know that he was in this? We want to own it because we're very proud of what he does in this film. He does such an amazing job, completely different than anything else he's ever done. And if you meet him in real life, you realize that his character is nothing like him in real life as well. So we just wanted to tackle it head on instead of it kind of nipping us in, just biting us in the butt later on. So that was
I understand, but I also would be surprised if it ever did. I mean, if there isn't any reason why, I think in this day and age, there's no
right.
reason why in this type of film, having an actor with that interesting background,
right.
would ever create a problem in my personal perspective.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I can say that, you know, there is a stigma still attached to being an adult performer, you know, out there, and people, you know, do look down on the adult actors and such. And so, you know, I think it was kind of what I would call a controlled scandal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was, we know it's there. We know I used to do it. I was an award-winning performer. And this way also, it was a way to kind of connect all of my fans from one world into something, you know, totally new and totally different, you know, and get like my 76,000 followers on Twitter to jump on board with something new.
Well, I think that makes complete sense. And you, by the way, when we're done with this interview, by all means, tweet it to your 76,000 followers. I have no problem with that.
Definitely.
you know, I had a TV show in the LA area on public access for most of the 90s, and one of the things I would do is I would cover a big annual adult video awards show that they had there. And because I was not a follower of the industry, I would go to these big award shows, and the fans would be there, and the stars would be there, and the fans would be going absolutely crazy about the stars. But I wouldn't know any of the stars, so it felt kind of like it felt like I was in a foreign country in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I did live in a foreign country for 5.5 years as well, where I was on red carpets with lots of people that were known by the people screaming nearby. But once again, I didn't know them. So that's very interesting. But definitely, if you have a fan base like that, you want them to follow you wherever you may end up.
Yeah. And my fan base has been really supportive, you know, whether it's, you know, the new back into kind of mainstream movies and entertainment that I'm doing or random art project, you know, whatever it is that I'm in, everybody seems to be very enthusiastic just to, you know, to get a glimpse of whatever's going on. So
everywhere we've screened so far, we've had people come specifically to see him in this movie. And even in Springfield, Massachusetts, which I wouldn't have thought a million years that we'd have some Charlie Harding fans, but there were.
No, I'm sure, completely.
That's cool.
So let's segue back to you, Brandon. One of the things that's clear from your professional history is you certainly have the expertise and the relationships to get a entertainment project made, whether it's TV, commercial, or a film. And I'm wondering, how many films have you actually done, and is this your first, or is this your first?
This is the first one that I've written, directed, produced. I've worked on others, but not in this capacity at all. Not in the least.
And I did watch the film last night. I wasn't able to. I did meet you briefly at the closing night party at Cinema Diverse, but I did not see the film there. However, I did watch it last night, and I was surprised. That's just around an hour and 20 minutes, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
Give or take a few minutes. Are you compelled to come up with a certain length of film when you're producing a feature? I guess, how do you – clearly you don't want anything in the movie that doesn't add to the movie, but I guess how do you come up with a feature film that's about an hour and 20 minutes?
Well, it's really funny because the original script was a little bit longer. It probably would have came out to about an hour 40. There's extra footage that we actually didn't include because I just didn't think that it – added to the story, and it kind of dragged it along a little bit. But, you know, there's actually I remember reading a recent article in IndieWire about how the, 70 to 90-minute movie is what people are going for now because it's like, you know, it holds your attention for so long. After a certain amount of time, it's like, well, you could probably just pare that down a little bit anyhow. So I just kind of just went with my gut and just how it felt. If it ended up being an hour and 10 minutes, and it was. If it was an hour and 40, it was. But I just kind of let the story dictate itself while we were in the editing process, and it just came out to be that.
Well, I didn't feel like it needed to be longer or shorter, but just in my own experience, I think I my thought was features are traditionally longer, but I completely accept your explanation that people are really getting into those shorter films. Now, the other thing that I want to commend you on is I really feel like the acting across the board is really solid, as is the writing. But one of the things I felt, I wondered when I was watching it, is that the delivery of the lines are so authentic. I was wondering if this was entirely scripted or maybe there was some, like, outlined improv happening.
Nope, 100%. And there were times that we went, Charlie can remember this. We did this one scene 21 times because there was one specific phrase that they kept missing. So we had to go back and go back and go back and go back. But at the same time, Charlie's pounding back beer after beer after beer. So he's getting more and more drunk throughout the whole thing.
It got a little nerve-wracking being on the roof after 7 or 8 beers filming going, oh, watch the edges for me. But I will attest for it being completely scripted. And I think what makes it come across so genuine is that Brandon had us as actors write backstory for our characters. So I went back all the way to like where my character would have been in high school and then wrote his entire life up until the point where the movie starts. And then he also brought, you know, all of us together for a table read in Atlanta first. Then we all met to do blocking rehearsals a second time somewhere else. At the actual location, and then the third time we finally all got together to shoot, you'd had a couple chances to really interact with your co-stars that you're supposed to be friends with or that you're supposed to be intimate with, and it really gave us a chance to form those bonds and just make it come across as a more genuine character.
Yeah.
Well, I thought all of the characters were quite genuine and authentic, which leads me to ask you, Brandon, about how you know this cast. Did you have long-standing relationships with some of them? Did you go through a traditional casting process?
I did go through a traditional casting process. We did a live casting in Atlanta, and then we took video. Oh, and in Miami, and then we took video submissions from all over the country. And to be honest, most of these roles were already cast with somebody else. I know the only part that was ever written for anybody was the part of Tess, who plays my ex-girlfriend in the film. And I wrote that part for Stephanie Davis specifically. In real life, she's just the most sweet, loving, caring person. So this was the complete antithesis of who she is in real life. I even auditioned people for the role that I did, and inevitably I didn't find anybody, so we actually auditioned myself. So I auditioned for the actual part. And then everybody else, I knew Anna Cohn and Stocko Pointer, who played Carrie and Becca, and those roles were actually already cast with somebody else. And I was just about to call up and have somebody and let them know that, hey, guess what, you know, you've been cast in this role. And Anna Cohn called me up, and she goes, I finally read your script. I said, okay. She said, I love it. I'm on audition. I'm like, girl, you're in Detroit. And she goes, well, me and Sadako want to audition. I was like, Sadako is, I don't even know where she is right now. She's probably touring the world. She's like, she's in New York right now. She wants to audition. I'm like, okay, well, if you guys want to send me a video interview, I'll give you until the next 2 hours. Send it to me, and then we'll go from there. And they sent it, and they nailed it. And it was it was just perfect. It was so perfect. So we cast them, and that's pretty much how everything else went, too. We just got surprised by these extra auditions. Barry Brandon, Brandon Majors, both of them, the parts were already cast with somebody else, and they came in and really just surprised us. So, yeah.
Well, I commend you for having an open mind and looking at the integrity of the and potential of the project as paramount to any preliminary decisions that may have been made along the way. So I'm going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk about Proxy the film even more after this.
Everything Nicholas Snow is available at NicholasSnow.com. For our video programming, check out NicholasSnow.tv. Please subscribe to the show for free at iTunes or by downloading a podcast app from your favorite app store. The snowstorm continues after this.
Designer furnishings, sparkling cocktail rings, vintage jeans and shirts for moms, teens, boys, and flirts. Area rugs and stylish bedding design your wedding. Shiny knickknacks and glam Hollywood throwbacks. You'll find it here at Revival. Voted best of the Valley thrift stores. Now with even more new treasures, plus one-of-a-kind consignment and estate items. Fashion, accessories, furniture, it's all in store at Revival. Find it here. Visit us at RevivalStores.com to find a Revival store near you.
Hey folks, mark your calendars for early November because it's time for Greater Palm Springs Pride, Southern California's popular and longest-running LGBT festival in the Coachella Valley. Palm Canyon Drive is closed to traffic and transformed into a vibrant, pedestrian-friendly Pride festival unique to Southern California. Palm Springs Pride is also one of the sponsoring organizations of the annual Harvey Milk Diversity Breakfast, which takes place every year in May. Visit pspride.org.
The LGBT Community Center of the Desert is a nonprofit organization dedicated to enriching the lives of the LGBT community in the Valley through health and wellness, social and educational programs. The center advances its mission through a clinical counseling and internship program, senior programming, youth anti-bullying and suicide prevention support programs, a growing volunteer program, and signature special events in the community for its members and allies. For more information on the LGBT Community Center, visit them on the web at thecenterps.org.
Those damn paparazzi, they heard Charlie was going to be in the studio, and they keep bothering us.
No autographs, please. No autographs, please.
Yes, exactly. So one of the things that I appreciated about the film is that the characters are they're all very different from each other, and their relationships are very different. And And they're all dealing with different issues. And one of the themes in the film is whether or not someone with HIV should disclose that when dating, and the whole anonymity and disclosure thing. And, you know, is it the responsibility of someone that is of both partners that are having sex to assume that other people are positive or negative? It's very, you know, people are still trying to figure this out for themselves. And so it's interesting how you took it on, Brandon. When you were writing this, what were your concerns?
It started with a whole cathartic process. I'd just gotten out of a relationship and I was angry at the world and I was tired of crying. And so I just kind of dug up some of these anger emotions, and it had nothing to do with HIV or anything like that. It was just me being mad about a relationship. And I just got inspired to write. And so I started writing these series of just different stories, and I saw this through line, this thread between them. And specifically the story of Steve, Tristan, and Price, the three friends, it stems from an argument that I'd had not too long before I started writing this script with a friend of mine who kind of went through something similar. And the simple conversation was, you know, when you go on a date with somebody, do you tell them that you're positive? And he said, no, why would I tell, why would it be the first thing that comes out of my mind? I was like, I don't know. I mean, what happens if they, you know, leave you, or they, you know, they don't want to be with you because of it, and you're like six dates in? He goes, well, then that's not the person that's supposed to be for me. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like, well, then when do you tell them? And he goes, when the timing is right. And I said, well, when do you know that? He goes, I don't know. I've never been in that position. And I was like, oh. And so it was a very sobering moment thinking what it is to be loved and allowed to be loved and love yourself and acceptance and everything, but the stigma that's attached to HIV, and I don't understand it. And I kind of wanted to give this voice on that end of the conversation. Now, the character of Steve in the film, he's been hurt. I don't really look at him as a victim nor the villain in any way. He's just a human, and he has human flaws, and he makes errors and mistakes. And so I kind of wanted to create a character that I personally don't understand. I don't understand his choices or why he does, but I wanted it to engage people and let them have this conversation afterwards about why did he do what he did, because I can honestly say I have no idea. So I figured it's up for discussion.
And it remains up for discussion. What would you like to add to this sort of theme, Charlie?
Well, you know, it's, I think, a common thread within the gay male community right now, specifically about disclosure and when is it cool to disclose, or is it uncomfortable? In this day and age where HIV is no longer a death sentence, a lot of folks feel that it's not as big of a deal to be the big deal, big medical concern that I personally kind of feel that it still needs to be and acknowledged as. But, you know, the question of stigma, of how to gently tell somebody, is there an appropriate way to tell people, you know, mm-hmm. it's like, do I kiss on the first date? Do I tell them I'm positive on the first date or whatever? Where does that go? And, you know, I'm the HIV negative half of a therodiscordant couple. My husband, Scotty Rage, and I have been together for almost 4 years now. And like, I remember he said, oh, by the way, in a, inbox on Facebook when we were just chit chatting up front, you know, about stuff, and, oh yeah, you know, just went to the doctor. Oh, by the way, I'm HIV positive, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, it was just one of those little things that he told me about himself. I like to say that HIV is, everybody's a diamond, and HIV is just one facet of that diamond, which is the whole personality.
Well, that's a very enlightened viewpoint. You know, I'm living with HIV myself, and I actually became HIV positive. You know, how someone becomes positive really shouldn't be an issue unless they choose to disclose
exactly.
for a particular reason. And I
right.
do disclose why and how I became positive, because I wanted other people to learn from what I feel was a personal mistake. And basically, I had a very rare experience of practicing unsafe sex, And I became HIV positive, and this happened when I was living in Thailand working as a foreign correspondent. And I decided to go public with my story because the issue had such invisibility in the region, and there's still a lot of stigma, especially in that part of the world, around the issue. So not immediately, but within about a year of becoming positive, I started to be extremely public about it. I had sort of a dual motivation. One of them is that I frankly think it's personally easier for me, for every single person out there, to know I'm positive than it is to handle this issue of one-on-one disclosure. But clearly, that still comes up. And I find that it's just easiest to put it out there right away. I don't have any online profiles right now, but when I do, I mention that I'm HIV positive. I think the way through this in terms of the stigma is that people's understanding is evolving. People are starting to learn that if a person living with HIV has a truly undetectable viral load, it means it's virtually impossible for them to transmit the virus. People mm-hmm. are beginning to learn that if an HIV negative person is on PrEP, which is pre-exposure prophylaxis, which means they are taking as a negative person the HIV medication that they would take if they were to be positive. If a negative person is taking that medication, it is also virtually impossible for them to become infected with HIV.
I'll interrupt you right there and say I have been on PrEP. I'm very public about this on my Facebook and Twitter and everything too. I've been on PrEP for about 2.5 to 3 years now.
1 year, well,
and
almost a year.
You know, I encourage every HIV negative person out there to talk to your doctor and look at this as, if nothing else, it's a good safety net. So,
well, exactly, and you know, I'll tell you one of the things I'm over. I'm over gay men staying online that. DDF seeking same, which now DDF, for those who may not know, mm-hmm. stands for drug and disease free seeking the
or
same.
Or clean.
Right.
Clean as
yeah,
clean.
The word clean is annoying too, yeah.
Right. I took
like
a shower.
Shower,
I'm very
today.
Clean. Yes.
Right? I figure if they're clean, does that mean that they'll come over and do my dishes? I mean, no.
Right.
Might as well.
Another key point is there are a tremendous amount of people that are making conscious decisions to have unsafe sex because they believe they are HIV negative and they believe their partner is because the partner told them or they're just assuming that they are. And in my situation, I did talk to the person that I ultimately had unsafe sex with who said and believed that he was HIV negative. And this was the big flaw in my own behavior because so many people that think that they may be HIV negative may no longer be HIV negative. And if they had recently become positive and they're not on treatment, it means they're quite infectious because the viral load tends to skyrocket at that point in the infection.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. You see lots of folks out there who will test, you know, negative in January, and they're still using their January test results to claim mm-hmm. that they're HIV negative in August, September.
Exactly.
You know, which technically their test results don't count anymore because
you know,
they've been sexually active since then.
Charlie is the reason why. I can't say that I was against PrEP when I first met Charlie. I can't even say that. I just had I had an open mind about the whole idea, but I think there was so much negative stigma attached to it that I just thought to myself, you know what, if I do it, then basically I felt like I was slut-shaming myself. And it's like, no, it has nothing mm-hmm. to do with it. I had been on PrEP for God knows how many months, almost up to a year before I even had sex, period, protected, not even just sexually active. And I remember telling a friend, yeah, I'm on it. And they're like, oh, you're just a slut. You just want to bareback sex. And I'm like, no, actually, I haven't had sex. I'm doing the smart thing right now, which is protecting myself. And if everybody else did that, then maybe we could stop this from happening. And then also, you know, what happens if I do meet somebody that is positive, you know? And I don't want that to affect my relationship, you know?
Well,
I just want to fall in love with somebody,
and
if I fall in love with somebody like that, then great.
I also think that people shouldn't be shamed if they decide they want to have bareback sex and that they're looking at being on PrEP as a way to protect themselves. And if they're looking at they happen to be with a partner that is positive, that, you know, mm-hmm. that person is undetectable. If two adults want to make that decision for themselves and PrEP is part of the equation, more power to them. One of the reasons that they develop PrEP is they found that human behavior was not resulting in the choice of condoms. So you mm-hmm. look at how humans behave and you come up with a solution that deals specifically with how humans behave. And the combination of...
That PrEP is out there, now that PrEP is available, I'm seeing, like, within the adult film industry, which I have a lot of friends in still, I've retired from it since then, but a lot of friends who are in the industry, and just in the gay world as a whole, the definition of safer sex is evolving. Because, you know, everybody has their own interpretation. Some folks feel that safer sex means condoms for oral, means, you know, condoms for any kind of touching and PrEP as well. Others people say, because I'm on PrEP, I consider having safer sex. So, you know, everybody has to take it in under their own advisement. And that's part of what goes on in this film, is that we all have different definitions of what we consider safe or what level of risk we're comfortable taking or not taking. And that's the conversation that goes on in this film, is we all have a different viewpoint, and how do we resolve that amongst our friendship or whatnot? And that's a really big conundrum.
You know, without digressing too much, I think that, you know, the best thing right now, and what I love about this film, is that it gets people talking. And I think that that's so important, is to be able to be honest with yourself, not even just about your HIV status or, you know, sex, safe sex, talking to somebody, keeping that conversation going about who you are, self-acceptance, self-love, all of the above. You know, that's what the theme of this film is. And, you know, I don't want to ruin the ending for everybody, but let's just put it that way. Like, self-acceptance is the key. So.
I don't want to ruin the ending either, but if I were to describe sort of what this film is about, it's a group of people who are in situations that are the result of their successes and failures in authentically connecting to other human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
And we don't really especially because I've lived in so many different places around the world, there are actual times where I will, you know, meet a friend that knows a friend from God knows where. I just recently had this happen to me. Somebody that I met in New York City happens to be good friends with somebody that I went to high school with in Italy that met in California. Like, two totally unrelated instances. And that, I think, really speaks volumes about this film, is that we make these decisions, and there is this kind of butterfly effect, and we don't know the consequences or, you know, how it's going to affect other people, but it will eventually. So being most honest with yourself and with others probably will help you live a better life and help other people too, I guess. I don't know.
Did you guys see the film Grand Canyon?
Nope.
Did you see the film Crash?
Yes. Brandon doesn't like the movie Crash.
No, hey, listen.
I liked the movie Crash. So.
Look,
it's that same kind of paradoxical, you know, I do this without realizing that it's going to cause this over there.
Mm-hmm.
I suggest that you guys watch the film Grand Canyon. That you look for the film and you watch the film Grand Canyon. So we're talking about Proxy the film. The website, and it should not be confused with Proxy the Movie, because there is a movie, ProxyTheMovie.com, which is someone else's movie. Your film is ProxyTheFilm.com. I'd love for each of you to describe what it was, and maybe you were together when this happened and maybe you weren't, but what was it like for each of you? I'll start with you, Brandon, to be in an audience viewing this film that was not comprised of your friends, family, and insiders, to be with a sort of a general, albeit LGBT audience screening the film, what was it like for you?
Charlie, I'm just going to tell him the truth, okay?
Yeah.
I don't remember it. I had a huge breakdown that day. I can't believe I'm telling this. This is so embarrassing.
This was at the Miami show.
At our premiere in Miami. I really don't remember. There was just so much happening all at once. There was, you know, personal things and everything, and it just kind of all came crashing down on me. I mean, like, it's one thing to be in the film. It's another thing to write it. It's another thing to direct it. And I wore all these hats, and I kind of blacked out crying. And then I ended up at the movie theater, and I saw pictures afterwards, and apparently I did a great Q&A session. But I really don't remember. I remember hearing people laugh. I remember seeing people cry. But the one thing that really resonated with me was the talk back afterwards and hearing these people talk about their stories and how they're connected. And this one man came up to me at the very end as everybody else had ushered out of the building. And he stopped me and he said, "Hey, I just want to thank you for this film." And I said, "Why?" And he goes, "Because I'm HIV positive." And I didn't know what to say at that point in time. I was like, "Oh, okay." And he goes, "And not many people really know. My family doesn't know, and only a few friends. And I think that after watching this movie, I realized I can't do this alone." And it was very sobering at that point in time because it was like, this isn't about me, and this is a little bit bigger than what I wanted it to be. And it did its job, and that was amazing. And I don't know what the end result was, if he did or didn't, but as far as seeing myself on the screen, I don't remember it. I don't remember it at all.
I'm also an actor, and I have a love-hate relationship with seeing myself on the screen. By the way, Brandon, were drugs and alcohol involved in that day where you don't remember?
No, actually, not at all.
Okay, that would be – if I wouldn't be a journalist if I didn't ask that question.
No, there was a little bit of drugs. Our cinematographer, she was like, "You're having a panic attack." And I'm like, "No, I'm not." And she's like, "Yeah, you are. Here's a Xanax." So she gave me one that kind of calmed down. But other than that, nope.
And do you ordinarily take Xanax, or have you had any experience
nope.
with it?
Nope.
Well, that could very well have to do with your recollection and lack thereof of that day. What about you, Charlie? Were you also at that particular premiere?
Oh yeah, that was our big official premiere in Miami, and I was exhilarated and terrified. I was terrified because this was my first step out of the adult industry, and I don't care how many people say, "Oh no, you're going to be great, you're going to be great." I was just petrified that I was going to make a fool of myself, you know. It was also terrifying because my mother and father were there. And up until this point, I had never officially told them that I had been an adult performer, an adult actor. And so part of this is like, "Hey, come to my movie premiere. By the way, I'm a retired porn star." you know, so I had an additional layer of kind of paranoid fear there. But and then back in the adult industry, I've never watched my performances. I would watch the little introduction part where I'd have some acting, you know, lines and that kind of thing, and then I'd shut it off because I didn't want to watch it. And this was the first time I'd really watched through something that I had put my abilities into, that I really, you know, went whole heart and soul into, and watched myself on screen. So it was a little unnerving and exhilarating to see that. And then just walking into the theater and having people in line yelling my name and asking for me to come over and shake hands and take pictures was amazing. You know,
the motorhome.
If you need an ego gratification, that's the big one right there.
Brandon's mentioning the motorhome. What is it about a motorhome?
Oh yes. We had a huge Route 7. The production company had a huge motorhome that they had us delivered to the theater in. So we had our own kind of red carpet drop-off. So that was super fun. And you know, it just added to the overall just kind of celebrity just excitement and such. And, you know, getting to do the step and repeat photos and, and everything. And then, you know, just the response from the audience when you're sitting there and that you're on the screen and they laugh when they're supposed to, when you say something and they groan or they growl
or they
huff because of something, you know, that's what makes you really, really proud because you know that you got the correct point across.
Right.
And then I cried, you know, at the end of seeing it the first time because I was so excited.
Well, good for you. You know, one of the most recent portion of our interview today makes me wish that there was video footage of what went through the lives and minds of the cast in the 24 hours leading up to the premiere and after. I think that would make a very fascinating movie.
That would have been a crazy, crazy fun, like little docudrama.
Mine
yes,
would have been
exactly.
48 hours long. It would have just been me standing in front of that thing staring at the screen.
He would have had about 3 hours of hiding in the closet because that's what he did during the panic attack. Because he hid in the coat closet.
Well, you know, we made it through, you know, as Barry Manilow sings, we made it through the rain. I would love for us to wrap up by just asking each of you, we'll start with you, Charlie, is there anything you would like to talk about that I haven't evoked with a question?
Well, if people want to know more about the story behind myself and my husband and our relationship being positive and negative, we have a really great interview on ManhattanDigest.com. Feel free to go on there and search for Charlie Harding and Scotty Rage, and you can read all about our philosophy behind our relationship. And just, you know, I hope everybody keeps looking out for me on Twitter. I'm at Mr. C. Harding, and I'm doing some art and such now on our Etsy store. So go to Etsy.com and search for Scotty and Charlie, and you can see my artwork and our Rage tees and such like that we do. And I just appreciate all the positive feedback and the negative feedback, too, because it tells me what I need to improve. And, you know, I'm thrilled to have everybody along on the journey with me.
I have done a quick Google, and if you Google Charlie and Scotty, and Anne is the ampersand, and Scotty is S-C-O-T-T-Y, there's all kinds of stuff that comes up about them. But if you add in Manhattan Digest, it is very easy to find the blog that you just referenced. Would you say one more about how people find – do you mention art?
Oh, yes. Scotty and I both paint, and we have a line of T-shirts that we design, one of art projects called Rage Tees. And if you go to Etsy, E-T-S-Y.com, and then search the stores for Scotty and Charlie, Scotty and Charlie. You can check out all of my artwork and the shirts that Scotty and I are designing.
That's Etsy.com, ETSY.com, Scotty and Charlie. In that case, you spell out and. Well, thanks for being on the show, Charlie. What about you, Brandon? Do you have anything that you'd like to add that I have not evoked with a question?
Well, right now, I think one of the most difficult things that we've kind of run into is that every film festival that we've entered into, they've all loved it, and that's great, and especially the audiences. I think other than Atlanta, which we won't know until this weekend, we've won an audience award or some kind of award because they really, really love it, which is great. But because it's such a small independent film, it hasn't gotten as much exposure. And so a lot of times what ends up happening is, you know, there'll be 20 slots for a film festival, and we'll be one of the 25. And then they have to get rid of one of the five, and they choose something that has, you know, bigger celebrity names or whatever it might be. And it's understandable, and I get that. But, you know, if you are out there and you really, really, really want to see this, definitely let us know. I mean, you can find us at proxythefilm.com, the film, not movie. And then we're on Instagram and Twitter at the same handle, which is proxythefilm. And then on Facebook, we're proxythefilm 2014, because proxythefilm is taken by the other movie, but, you know, whatever. It's pretty easily found, but most of the information is on proxythefilm.com. And we got a couple more film festivals that were pending, and then the next step is we're looking for distribution so that we can put it on some kind of, you know, video on demand or theatrical release or something like that, because I think this is a film that really needs to be seen by people so they can talk more. I mean, that's the main thing. And I think that's pretty much it. I mean, next steps for me, I'm writing a new script. I have a TV show that is in the pipeline right now, which I can't talk about, but just look out for it, I guess. As vague as that could possibly be. I'm trying to think what else. I think that's about it. I'm still single.
Well, you're still single. Okay. Well.
Very much so. So eligible.
Okay, top, bottom, or versatile. Let's just put it out there.
Very much both. Very much both. Oh, God, Mom. Well, my mom already knows. She's asked me a million one times.
Well, she'd have to listen to almost the very end of the interview to get that piece of information.
She will. She actually, yeah. I'm really shocked. She came to the Atlanta showing. There's these pictures that I posted up on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. She's gorgeous. My mom's just beautiful. But I was really happy. My dad came, too, to the Springfield showing and brought the entire family and aunts, uncles, great uncles, people that I can't believe that they sat through a dildo scene. But, you know.
You know, people ask me why I'm not married. And I say, because there's only two single tops in all of California, and I haven't met them yet.
Charlie and Scotty.
That's true. Well, we're not
yes,
single.
Exactly. And this is all the foundation for our next episode coming up. And so, listen, exactly. Thank you guys for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I'm going to send you guys a link that you can use to share this via social networking in perpetuity. You can embed it on your website if you'd like the interview. And
will do.
And it was nice meeting you in person, Brandon. And I look forward to meeting you, Charlie. If you come to Palm Springs, let me know.
Oh, I definitely will. I definitely will.
Okay, you guys have a great evening.
All right, you do the same, okay?
Thank you, too.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, bye.
So I've been speaking with Brandon Dayette and Charlie Harding of the film Proxy. Check out ProxyTheFilm.com for more, and keep happy.
We are, in fact, connecting the circuitry of humanity. All of us connected. Please continue to connect with Nicholas Snow on Facebook, Twitter, Periscope, Instagram, Google+, and other social networks. Everything Nicholas Snow is available at nicholassnow.com. For our video programming, check out nicholassnow.tv. Please subscribe to the show for free at iTunes or by downloading a podcast app from your favorite app store. This program is produced and copyrighted by Nicholas Snow Productions, LLC. Thank you for being a part of the snowstorm. We are honored by your presence.